We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
I would say now we're just installing things, you know, day by day. I'm not looking into the future right now. I'm just letting the coaches do what they do. I'm just here trying to grind every day, be the best I can be, and, you know, contribute to the tight end room.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Crisco Forth. Not joined by Harry Douglas this Saturday morning, just flying solo. Glad to be with you. I think we got our I think we've got our technical issues solved. That was not a fun 40 minutes. I'll be honest. That's not the way you want to spend your Saturday, let me tell you. But appreciate Christian and our folks on the technical side of things, Ken as well, for his patience and helping us be able to get things set. So Jason Longshore is going to be with us coming up in about 20 minutes as we roll through our final hour. That you just heard was Kyle Pitts talking about, you know, how the Falcons coaches are going to use him. We had Bobby Butler on, and I hate we had such a cluster there with Bobby for a little bit because, you know, he was talking about some of the guys that he played against in his time with the Falcons. He mentioned Ozzie Newsome, and I wanted to get his thoughts on if there was anybody from a mismatch standpoint that Kyle Pitts reminded him of. I don't know necessarily that he's Ozzie Newsome to me, but, you know, if you're old enough to remember Kellen Winslow and how big and fast and athletic Kellen Winslow was when he came into the league with the Chargers, maybe there's a little bit of that multiplied in the role of Kyle Pitts, because Kellen Winslow was that guy was a huge weapon when he first, and throughout his career, really, but his ability to use his size and his speed at the tight end position at that time was huge. Now, I think Kyle Pitts talking about how the Falcons coaching staff will use him, I think it's going to be a little bit different, as we've talked about here on Saturday mornings before. I think the Falcons end up probably splitting him out wide as much or maybe even more than they have him tight to the line of scrimmage like they would a typical tight end. So it's going to be fun. Arthur Smith's got a lot of little tools that he can play with there on offense, and we'll get to the future of Julio Jones coming up at 11:40 this morning. The Falcons, along with the Eagles and the Cowboys, they have the easiest schedules based on opponents' winning percentage from the 2020 season. What does that mean? We'll see. You know, we'll see what that means. Is can that be enough to get this team into a playoff position or have them competing for a playoff late in the season? Can the Falcons play meaningful games late in the season? I think those are questions we're going to find out as we go through this. What non-division game are you most looking forward to for the Falcons? I've got two. You can let us know on Twitter at 929 The Game. You can find me at CriscoForth1. I've got two. One is the Miami game coming up on October the 24th. And the reason that I think the Miami game is so significant is I think it's going to tell us a lot about, we're going to know a lot about this Falcon team by that point. They're going to be coming off a bye after a trip to London where they face the Jets. And this schedule in the early part of the season, outside of that week two game against Tampa and Tom Brady, I think it sets the Falcons up to possibly be able to get some wins early on. So who is this team early? Because by the time they go to Miami in October, I think we're going to have an idea of what this team can do. We all know the strength of this team, especially this season, is going to be its offense. I think they're going to score a lot of points. I think in some weeks they may have to outscore people in order to be able to win. Miami has got some really good corners, and I think they're going to be a little bit of a test for the Falcons. So that's one, especially early in the season, that I want to see. The other game is that January 2nd game at Buffalo. That end of the season stretch for the Falcons is tough. You started in December now. And remember, this is a 17-game season, an 18-week season when you factor in the bye. But you go to the start of the season in December, in that final 6 weeks or so stretch for the Falcons, you get the defending Super Bowl champs in Tampa at home. Then you go at Carolina, which is a divisional opponent on the road. Then you take the cross-country trip to San Francisco. You're back home to face the Lions, and then you have to go to Buffalo. It's early January. You know it's going to be cold. I like cold weather football. And if there's some snow, that's even better. But that's the way this season ends for the month of December. And then, you know, they close things out in January. They'll close it out against the Saints. But if you want to tailgate on a road game for the Falcons this year, Buffalo, January the 2nd, if you can stand the cold, I think that crowd will be, especially if the Bills are as good as folks think they can be, that crowd in Buffalo should be fun. And I think, again, that's going to tell us a lot about where this team is, because despite the question marks on this defense, and I do think there's a lot of question marks defensively still, this team is too talented to be 4-13 or whatever it is next year. I expect the Falcons to keep it together. I expect them to still be in the wild card picture in the early part of December. And that final stretch that we just talked about, starting with the Buccaneers at home in December, is going to be the key. Vegas has got the Falcons' win total set at 7 in this 17-game season. That puts them at 7-10 on the year. How many games do you think the Falcons can win this year? 404-741-0929, if you want to weigh in on it. How many games in a 17-game season, how many games can the Falcons win this year? I feel like 7-8 is probably about right. You know, this team should be close to 500. I think there's too many question marks on this defense to think that this team can do a ton more than that. And isn't that the way the NFL's built anyway? It's like built for everybody. Well, it used to be built for everybody to go 8-8. I don't know what it's going to be. I guess it's going to be built for everybody to go, you know, 7-10 or 8-9 or 9-8 or something like that now. But that's the way I see it. How many wins do you see for the Atlanta Falcons in the 2020 season? 404-741-0929. If you want to weigh in. Just one primetime game this year for the Falcons. That's a Thursday night against the Patriots. That is the week before Thanksgiving. I'm okay with that, by the way. I am okay with the Falcons not having too many primetime games. That means I get home at a decent hour on a Sunday. A lot of 1 o'clock games for the Falcons this year. A couple of 4 o'clocks, just the one game in primetime. That's a Thursday night tilt against the Patriots, and that's something that the NFL created. When they introduced the NFL package, or this Thursday night package, the idea was that every team in the league is going to get at least one Thursday night game, or would get at least one primetime game. If you don't do the, you know, obviously Sunday night football is the big one, and then you've got the Monday night package on ESPN. And used to be, way back when they were putting together the Monday Night Football package, you had to be a playoff team the year prior in order to be on Monday Night Football. I don't know how much, you know, the Monday night schedule to me doesn't have the same kind of pizzazz that it did, you know, 25 years ago. Sunday night does. Sunday night's got a lot of bells and whistles, but Thursday Night Football kind of not really. Or Monday night football, kind of not really. And Thursday night, you know, again, because everybody gets a chance to be on there, it seems like. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. How many games do you think the Falcons can win in 2020? 404-741-0929. There's a chance for a fast start, I think, for the Falcons. You're talking about 3 games against the NFC East in the first, 4 games of the season? That was the NFC least last year with Philly, the Giants and Washington all coming in the first, you know, first quarter of the season for the Falcons. So I think there's a chance for them to get off to a fast start. If we're going to talk about the win total for the Falcons, again, this isn't going to be a four-win team. They may not win much more than four, but this isn't going to be a four-win team again. I think the floor is probably somewhere around five or six, and the ceiling for this team right now, the way they're constructed, is probably 10 wins, 10 and 7, if everything goes well, if Dean Pease can come in and have that positive effect on this defense, then I think there's a chance they get to double-digit wins. And right in the middle of that is where I think they finish somewhere, probably around seven or eight wins. That's the way it looks for the Falcons. I think, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10, and I'm going to go in the middle of that at 7 and 8. Vegas has them winning 7, 8 games. I think Vegas, more often than not, is more right than they are wrong when it comes to some of these win totals and how they see this team matching up and the success that they see the Falcons having. So I guess I'm kind of right there somewhere with Vegas. 7, 8 wins is probably going to be where this team finishes because, again, I just don't – they're going to be too talented, especially on offense, to finish with just four wins. The issue is they're going to have to outscore some people because we know what these question marks are defensively. We'll talk a little more Falcons before we finish things up today. We'll get to the future of one Julio Jones. Falcons aren't putting any water on this fire. They haven't done anything to squash any of these rumors that Julio may not be a Falcon to start the 2021 season. Nobody's coming out and saying Julio Jones will be a Falcon for life right now. So we'll see how that plays out. Jason Longshore is going to join us. We come back, we'll get into a little bit of Atlanta United. We'll get Jason's thoughts as he's part of the No Swag Shop podcast that hits Facebook Live on the Sports Radio 92.9 The Game Facebook page. He's part of that, so we'll talk a little bit of Hawks with Jason as well. We'll get to all of that here as we continue on. Thanks for hanging out with us this morning. Apologies again for our technical issues. I think we've got them solved this far, but glad to be with you this morning. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Chris Goforth hanging out on a Saturday. Glad to have you along with us and glad to head out on the waitfor.com hotline. Welcome in our pal Jason Longshore. Jason, of course, the color analyst for the Atlanta United broadcast that you can hear, including a match coming up later today between Atlanta United and Montreal on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And then he's also part of the No Swag Shop, where he and Mike Conti talk a little Atlanta Hawks basketball every week on Facebook, on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page. Jason, before we get to United, if you don't mind, I'd like to start with the Hawks for just a second. I know you keep up with it, you follow it, and you enjoy talking about it. And this is, it's remarkable. I said this morning, if you would have told me at the end of February, when it looked like things were just in a tailspin and this team couldn't close out games, they couldn't finish, they couldn't win late, that this team would, since March 1st, have the best record in the NBA and be sitting here with a chance heading into the final game of the regular season to finish fourth in the East, I don't know that I would have believed it at that point.
No, I would have thought, if you had told me that at that point, I would have thought you had gotten in to some moonshine or something. I mean, that was impossible. When we first started doing the No Swag Shop on the Facebook page for the station, when we're talking about, you know, what the team needs to do to improve for next year, what kind of areas you're looking to target to improve, contract situations, the thought of being the best team in the league down the stretch, that was impossible at that point.
Yeah, it's been a wild turnaround. It's been a fun turnaround. I can tell you this much. It's had me much more in tune to the NBA as a whole late in the year than what I have been in the last couple of years, where maybe I would, you know, still follow along with what the Hawks were doing, but maybe not necessarily dialed into the rest of the league at this point. The Hawks managed to stay out of the play-in tournament, which I think is key for them. Your thoughts on this play-in tournament, because, and where I'm going with this, you're a soccer guy. Soccer has had, at many levels, in many leagues, will have a tournament in the middle of the season. The NBA is talking about doing the same thing in the future. Now, as a to me, that just seems kind of strange. What's the purpose of that mid-season tournament? What can it do for the NBA?
See, I love the idea of the mid-season like cup tournament. You know, in the MLS, for example, we have the U.S. Open Cup in the middle of the season, and I think the NBA is looking at doing something like that around the All-Star break. I'm not a fan of the play-in tournament per se. I hope that when we get back to a normal season next year, it's the normal playoff structure that we know and expect. I think maybe it's a little too bloated at the moment. But a mid-season tournament is exciting because it can be a spark for teams that have maybe struggled a little bit in the first part of the season. Maybe they had injuries, a coaching change, what have you, and you go on a little run and win the tournament. I think it'd also be an opportunity for the NBA, and this is another thing that Mike and Andy and I have talked about on No Swag Shop. It'd be an opportunity for them to maybe invite a European champion in and play, maybe a couple of other clubs from around the world to play. As the game continues to grow and the NBA is at the forefront of it, that could be transformative, not just for, you know, those other teams getting that opportunity to test themselves against the best, but for the NBA to continue to recruit the best players in the world at a younger age and be able to develop them. It'd be an exciting twist in the season, you know, that we're not used to in the NBA side, but soccer fans would love it.
How concerned do you think we should be over these TV ratings in the NBA? They haven't been good so far. Haven't been good at all.
Yeah, it's tough the way people consume sports now. I don't know if the old school TV ratings metrics are necessarily the most important way to do this. It's changed, you know, and I think you're looking at people maybe not watching all of the games, but consuming the highlights. It's the conversation on social media. It's so many different things than just TV ratings now. I think the NBA is in a good place. There's a lot of conversation about it. There's a lot of new stars coming through. I wonder how they'll solve the TV rating side, because it does tie into dollars and advertising and money and revenue.
Jason Longshore, he's a color analyst for the Atlanta United broadcast. You can hear Jason and Mike Conte tonight. They'll have the call as the United take on Montreal tonight. You can catch it here, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's switch gears now. We've talked about the Hawks. We're going to do this again, by the way, because we got to get your thoughts on John Collins and what's going to go there, but we'll save that for another time. Let's talk about United here for a minute. Where is Atlanta United right now under the direction of a new coach and kind of a new feeling around the organization? Can you kind of put it into terms as to where they are right now?
Yeah, it's early days. You're four games in the league. You've had CONCACAF Champions League as well, so eight games in a short period of time, but 30 games left in league play. And it's a process. You know, that's what most top managers will tell you at this level. You don't come in and have the team playing its best soccer day one. It takes time to understand the concepts that Gabriel Heinze is instilling in this group. And there's some differences in the way that they've played in the past, including from the Tata Martino days. Gabriel Heinze is not a carbon copy of Tata Martino by any stretch. He wants the team to play higher up the field consistently, defend higher up the field. That's something that takes some getting used to, because your natural inclination, you lose possession, is to recover, drop, and defend and be secure defensively. What Gabriel Heinze wants this team to do, and they've struggled to do it here lately, I think, as the amount of minutes they've played in a short period of time has caught up to them. He wants them to stay up high and press and put the other team under pressure, cause those turnovers that can lead to quick chance opportunities.
Jason, you go back to when this franchise first started, and you've been with it, you know, literally since day one. Well, you go back, I think one of the things that helped Atlanta United and kind of helped get this city behind it, and you and I have talked about this before, it was the style of play that Tata brought when he took over that kind of led it to it was exciting. People enjoyed it. People wanted to watch. Even folks who weren't soccer fans like me, I didn't grow up following it, but it was hard not to get caught up in what was happening because it was an exciting brand to play and they were winning. With Heinze in his style, can it do the same thing? That because I do feel like that was so key for this organization in the early going to play that style.
The interesting conversation that I think people are starting to have is when you look at Tata Martino's Atlanta United, especially late 2017 when the team moved into Mercedes-Benz Stadium, style was part of it, but most importantly, it was goals. And it wasn't just the style creating those goals, the way that some of those games turned early with, you know, quick goals, with quick turnovers, teams coming in and being overwhelmed by playing in front of the crowd at Mercedes-Benz Stadium and games, you know, turning, you know, out of hand really fast for the opposition. The style had a component to that, absolutely, but it was a lot of goals. When you look at just take the scoreboard out of it for me right now, and you look at the style that Atlanta United is working towards, they're not a finished product by any stretch, but you're seeing a lot of these things at least every match, maybe not 90 minutes of every match. That's going to take some time, but you're seeing these things every match. I enjoy this style more. It's just the goals aren't there yet. And that's the hard thing about the sport at times as you're getting into it and digging into it is style can be great. You can play really, really well and you can lose. You can not find a goal. You can play poorly, find a couple of goals off of set pieces, off of deflections, off of turnovers, and maybe that masks the style thing a little bit. So as Atlanta continues to mature as a soccer city, like now the conversation's starting to turn a little bit past just goals or style to get goals. Or what do people want? And I think those conversations are a little fascinating at the moment.
Jason Longshore, he's a color analyst for the Atlanta United broadcast. You can hear it tonight. We'll talk a little bit about United and Montreal coming up here in just a few minutes with Jason on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. How close is Joseph Martinez to being 100%?
He's getting a lot closer. That goal last week was huge for him, huge for his confidence. I think that's the number one element that I'm seeing that is still coming back. It is confidence, is reading the play and reacting quicker. I think Joseph, as a striker in this league, has been at his best when he's made the runs off the ball before the person with the ball is ready to deliver the pass. Joseph's run directs where the ball is going to go. Right now, he's a little more reactionary. He's waiting for the pass, then he makes the run. Once he gets back into the flow of games consistently and game after game, that's going to come. I think we're starting to see it. It's just not quite 100% there. I'd put him at 85% maybe now.
Tell us about Montreal and what we can expect to see from them tonight.
Yeah, Montreal's been a surprise under Wilfred Nancy, their manager. They play a 3-5-2. And they have two forwards who are in good form right now in Bjorn Johnson and Romel Kyoto. They're going to make it difficult for Atlanta's three center backs is what I'm expecting to see. But Montreal's a team that will get a lot of numbers forward. They will risk, especially out wide. And I think Atlanta United can get numbers out wide and take advantage of that. I think the game's going to turn on the flanks. And Brooks Lennon becomes very, very important tonight. Jake Mulroney, if he gets the start, becomes very important tonight. Marcelino Moreno is critical to this team's success. Atlanta can create space and create opportunities from wide positions and hurt Montreal. Montreal can hurt them with those two up top by playing a little direct at times.
I know it's early, Jason. Is there a favorite in the East in the MLS?
It is early, and it's tough to tell because Columbus was the one that we thought coming in would be that favorite, defending champs. They upgraded their roster in the offseason, but CONCACAF Champions League, a little bit of the hangover from dealing with that. They haven't looked great yet. Philadelphia, same thing. They've looked good, but not great. You know, you've got a couple surprises like Montreal. New England is in that mix. I think Nashville can be in that mix. I do think Atlanta can be in that mix. It's a really crowded Eastern Conference. I don't think anybody has stepped away from the pack like we've seen out west with Seattle at the moment. But I think the top tier of the Eastern Conference is deeper than the West right now.
Before Atlanta United came along, if you followed MLS soccer, the team that was regarded as being excited, exciting to watch, the team that had the most rabid fan base prior to Atlanta United might have been, and at least in my estimation, it was the Seattle Sounders. They're off to a pretty good start. Are you buying Seattle now with four wins and a draw through the first five?
I think we have to because of what Brian Schmetzer's done since he took over. I was not buying them coming into the season. I thought Jordan Morris's injury would really make it difficult for them to be as dangerous in the attack as they have been in the past. I thought their defense was a little suspect at times over the last couple of years. But Brian Schmetzer's tweaked the formation. He's playing two up top. He's made some subtle tactical changes that are working really well for that team. And Christian Roldan is proving to be one of the better underrated players in MLS. And Raul Ruiz Diaz is a forward who gets you goals consistently. If you have that and you're good enough defensively, you're going to win a lot of games in this league.
Any update now? You and I, we've talked about it a lot when we've been together before. And I have told you it is my opinion that in order for this league to continue to grow and take the next step, they've got to find some broadcast rights that get these games available, get it on linear television to start with, get on, you know, whether that's ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, anything like that. What are you hearing in regards to, and I know there's been some talk about some of the money that has been paid to secure the rights of some of the European soccer leagues. Where's MLS fitting into this mix right now?
So they've got this year under contract and next season under contract. I think negotiations can fully start for that next deal in the 2022 calendar. So it's interesting because you're seeing more games on linear TV right now than ever before, and in MLS, but also other leagues as well. ABC's committing time to soccer. CBS is committing time to soccer where they haven't in the past. NBC with the Premier League, you know, Fox with MLS. You're seeing games everywhere, which is really fascinating at the moment as the ratings have been good around the game. MLS's ratings, you want to continue to improve it. And I think the number one thing that MLS needs to do in their next deal is have a consistent day and time for a primetime, nationally televised game. And if it's, you know, if it's not directly in prime time, I think one thing that the NFL, it's very easy. You know when the games are on Sunday. You know when everybody's playing. Don't have to worry about that. In the Premier League, you know when the games are going to be. You know, teams might get bumped into different TV windows, but you know when the games are going to be. MLS, you have no idea when it's going to be on national TV, when the big games are. A consistent, focused game of the week would be huge for the next deal. And if that's a Friday night, if that's a Monday night, if that's a Sunday afternoon, find the time and dedicate it to it so it becomes destination viewing.
Jason Longshore, you can hear him tonight with Mike Conti as Atlanta United takes on Montreal. Jason, thanks for the time, man. As always, good to catch up. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, we'll catch up soon. Good to talk to you, Chris.
All right, man. Jason Longshore, again, check him out tonight. He'll be with Mike Conti as Atlanta United takes on Montreal. We'll get into all of that. We'll save that for those guys. We're going to get back into the Falcons, talk a little bit about the future of Julio Jones. We'll do that as we get ready to wrap it up here on this Saturday morning. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Chris Goforth on this Saturday morning. No Harry Douglas this week. Harry is off seeing his sister-in-law get married. So he is off doing that. Hope everything goes well for them. And I hope today certainly a special day for the Douglas family. And hope that holds out to be true today. They got some good weather for it, at least. So hope everything goes well. And look forward to having Harry back in the fold again next week. And, of course, as we always do with Harry here, we'll talk a lot about the Atlanta Falcons. And enjoyed having Jason Longshore on a minute ago, and I love Jason's insight always into soccer, because in the MLS in particular, and really the future of the sport and how it's going to grow. And I had to ask him about the television future of MLS, because if that league is going, the next step for the MLS has got to be some sort of mainstream network TV deal to be able to get them on in prime time. That has to be because what that's going to lead to is more money being pumped into the league through the TV contract, which means player salaries will increase, which means that the MLS will be able to attract better players. You attract better players. Quality of play is going to be better. It's going to make the league better. The issue that soccer has, and I have watched more of it both from the MLS and certain, last year I used to, Jason, I used to joke with Jason last year that when everything kind of shut down last year during the pandemic, I spent my Saturday mornings watching Bundesliga. And so I feel like I've watched probably more soccer this year than I have in a long time. Haven't seen anything in person this year as I have in years past, but I've at least been able to watch more of it on television. And the one thing that soccer has got to figure out is how they create the commercial time for the inventory to be able to get commercials played, because you go long stretches without commercial breaks, and that's not how American network television is used to working. They want that every half inning in baseball. How many times do we see it in football? A kickoff, a commercial break, or a touchdown, a commercial break, a kickoff, and a commercial break. I mean, we see it all the time. That's something they've got to figure out how to work around, because, again, the sport of soccer doesn't lend itself, really, to those kind of breaks. They end up going over an extended, they play an extended period of time before there's a timeout. Let's get back to the Falcons today, because we've talked a lot about the Falcons and the future of Julio Jones. Going to come back to that, because the Falcons have yet to squash any of these rumors that they may be looking to possibly trade Julio Jones. Terry Fontenot, the only thing he said is, well, we're listening. We're listening to everybody. But nobody's coming out and saying that, yes, Julio's going to be a Falcon for life, or we plan to keep Julio here. I'm sure the Falcons, the same way we talked earlier about Matt LaFleur wanting to keep Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, sure he does. That gives him the better chance to win. I'm sure the Falcons want to keep Julio Jones here, truth be known, because it gives them a better chance to win. But it may not be feasible in order for that to happen. Peter King said this week that he thinks it's 60-40 Julio Jones gets traded. Now, as Ken and I talked about a little bit earlier, the Falcons have got to find the right offer for Julio. The Kyle Pitts pick for the Falcons in the first round was about winning now. The decision not to draft a quarterback, to stay with Matt Ryan, to take a difference maker on offense, that was about winning now. And if you want to win now, having Julio on the roster certainly gives you a bit of a boost. So you've got to find the right compensation to be able to get in return if you're going to ship Julio Jones out of here. What would it take to trade Julio Jones, and what would the Falcons realistically be able to get back? after June 1st, Falcons can save some money by trading Julio Jones. And that's what this is all about. Has nothing to do with, you know, Julio's not hurt. Doesn't have anything to do with his lack of productivity or the fact that anybody thinks he's washed up or finished or anything like that. Not a knock on Julio at all. It's the hard reality of a salary cap situation. Thank you, Thomas Dimitroff. Falcons can save some money, $15.3 million this year. They would lose $3 million in cap space next year by trading him. Right now, as it stands, the Falcons have about $500,000 in cap space. That's not even enough to sign their rookie class. So something post-June 1 has got to happen for the Falcons. It's not the only option that the Falcons have. They could restructure Julio, give them some space this year. They could restructure Grady Jarrett. That's what Thomas Dimitroff did for several years, but that's also how we got himself in, how we got to this position that the Falcons are in right now. $15 million for Julio Jones. Still, it's not a bad deal, per se. It's a little expensive for a guy his age. But Julio is still good enough, and this deal, I think, is still a good enough deal that you can get some draft capital back if you decide to go that route. And if you're a team that is close and you feel like that Julio Jones is a guy and Julio wants to come, you feel like Julio Jones is worth it, then maybe it makes sense for somebody. So you're either going to trade Julio, restructure his contract, or you go in and you rework Grady Jarrett. That's really it. That's really all you got. You don't have a whole lot of other options if you're the Falcons right now to try to make this thing work. And if you restructure Julio, you can save enough, but as we've talked about before, all you're doing is kicking that can down the road for another year. You're taking a cap problem in 2021, and you're going to make it a problem in 2022 and a problem in 2023. You just push it another year or two down the road. That's what Thomas Dimitroff did several times. That's how we got to this situation that we're in. Sooner or later, you're going to have to pay the piper. Sooner or later, the cap situation with the Falcons is going to have to be dealt with. I thought back when last season ended and we knew all of this was coming. We knew where this team was going to be picking in the draft. And we knew what was coming off of a 4-win season last year. You knew that this was going to, I thought the Falcons would elect to, in the first year of a new GM, first year of a head coach, deal with it now. Go ahead and deal with it now. Basically, you're giving the free pass to Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith. Take the cap hits, deal with what you've got to deal with now, and move on. And try to build towards, you know, being a contender in 22 or 23. I think the direction that the Falcons have gone since then shows that this management team of Fontenot and Smith is more about trying to win, at least stay competitive in 2021. And what can you get right now for Julio Jones? If he's leaving here and he's going to a contender, and this is where, you know, how the media plays into it and the way, you know, how the situation, you know, Ken and I talked about it a little bit, you know, how things kind of get painted. The idea that, oh, Julio's, he's beat up. He's, you know, he's got these nagging injuries. Julio doesn't, you know, he's not on the field anymore like he used to be. Well, all of that stuff, yeah. Did he struggle some last year with the hamstring? Yes, he did. But as we talked about, if the Falcons would have needed him, if they would have been in contention for a playoff spot, then I think Julio Jones probably plays more down the stretch last year than what he did. He didn't play because the Falcons didn't need him to. They knew they were headed for a top five pick in the draft. So why put him out there, risk aggravating something or making something more severe when you can just hold him out? If this would have been a situation where the Falcons were talking about the playoffs, then I think this narrative about Julio and how many games he missed probably wouldn't be quite what it is. But if teams feel like the Falcons want to move on from Julio, then they're not going to offer they're not going to offer much to the Falcons for him. If the narrative is that Julio is an injury risk at this point, they're not going to offer much. As we talked about earlier, I don't see the Falcons getting a first round pick out of Julio. But I think it's a fair question to ask. We talk about what's the future of Julio, what is the, you know, what can the Falcons get for him? I think it all comes down to how does the rest of the league view Julio Jones? I don't think there's an injury issue with the hamstring. I don't think that's real. But given his age, and I still think the guy can play, I still think he's got good years left in him. You're probably looking, though, at a day two pick. And by the end of June, we're going to know. I think we'll know something by the end of June. I know I have heard other people say, including Peter King and some others, say they think this is something that the Falcons let ride right up until training camp, that it could be later on into the summer, you know, August, before we actually see something happen. I don't think that's the case. I think something happens in June. I think they're going to want to figure this thing out sooner rather than later. Terry Fontenot knows that when he took this job, he stepped into a big old pile, and now you got to clean it off your shoe. And that's what he's going to be looking to do. Plenty more conversation about the Falcons and the future of Julio Jones coming up here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's going to wrap it up for me. Thanks to Bobby Butler for being with us earlier. Thanks to Jason Longshore for hanging out with us for a few minutes. Thanks to Ken. Bless his heart, man. He's had to deal with more crap today from a technical standpoint than anybody should have to. So, Ken, thanks. We'll see you guys next Saturday. Harry's back next Saturday. We'll be talking a lot more about the Falcons next week as well. So make sure you make plans to be with us. Until then, have a great week. Enjoy your weekend. See ya. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.